John Quincy Adams took his inaugural oath on a book of law. But when George W. Bush steps up to be sworn in, he will place one hand on a Bible that may be open to some particular verse. Mr. Bush, in fact, will be using the same Bible first used by George Washington, a Masonic Bible. But not all presidents have selected the same biblical chapter and verse for their inaugurations. George Washington himself opened that borrowed Masonic Bible in haste and swore on the first passage that came to hand, Genesis 49, verse 13. Other presidents have selected passages that are especially pointed or poignant to them. Martin Marty is a professor emeritus of American religious history at the University of Chicago and an ordained Lutheran minister. Professor Marty, thanks very much for being back with us.
Good to be on.
And we know George Washington's verse historically. Did it say anything of him, even though he arrived at it at random?
When you first read it, you think it couldn't say anything about anybody because it talks about Zebulun, one of the ancient tribes. But as it goes on, it talks a little bit about Zebulun having found a haven. And I think that that concept of the haven or the refuge runs through many of the passages that later presidents did choose.
What are some of the other passages that have been selected over the years?
Interestingly, only two presidents ever hit on the same one. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter and Warren Harding, both of them Baptists, by the way. Carter chose Micah 6:8, what is the Lord required of you but to do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. That's very often invoked in national life. It makes a lot of sense. To me, the interesting thing with Carter is that because he made such a furor over saying he had an experience of Jesus and was born again, so in the inaugural, he was less explicitly religious than most.
And it's possible, too, that George W. Bush will do something a few other presidents have had, which is just to put his hand on a closed Bible.
He may, but if he does that, he will certainly quote the Bible in his inaugural address. It's very hard for a president to get through an inaugural address without resort to the Bible and have some prayer for two reasons. One, it's a rough job, and you need all the support you can get, and that means for these people, all of them were religious, and they're going to lean on the heaviest thing, and that would be God, and in America, the sacred book of the Bible. The other thing is they want some sense that they're connecting with the nation. This is much trickier. Mm-hmm. Because the nation passages in the Bible almost always refer to a specific people, the ancient people of God, the people of Israel. Dwight Eisenhower and Ronald Reagan both chose 2 Chronicles 7:14, and that really talks about if my people, God says, if my people will do so-and-so, then I will keep my covenant and I will do so-and-so for them. Now, that could be inclusive enough that an American Buddhist or Hindu or Muslim could say, okay, we're part of a people, but it may not be my God. So that's a little bit tricky, and yet I can't picture the presidents not reaching out somehow in that direction.
Professor Marty, I raise this matter carefully with you only because you are certainly have been outspoken in, I don't want to say defense, but outspoken in behalf of the idea that there is a separation between secular interests and religious interests when observed in government, and that atheists have a right to participate as citizens too. Does some of this risk crossing the line in your mind these days in an inaugural address?
I don't think you could say it crosses the line of what is called the wall of separation between church and state. There never was such a wall. And it may not even fit on separation of church and state. I prefer James Madison's way of saying that we should make a line of distinction between religion and the civil authority. I don't think that this kind of public ritual oversteps. I think you have to be discreet. I think you have to be mindful of the ever-growing pluralism in America. And I think it is terribly offensive if you create the impression that other believers or non-believers can't be full citizens. That would run against the facts of our national life, and it would run against the Constitution and what citizenship means. And I think it would run against the nature of prophetic and pure religion, in which you're not supposed to put yourself up on that pedestal and talk down everybody else.
Professor Marty, thank you very much.
And thank you very much.
Martin Marty, Professor Emeritus of American Religious History at the University of Chicago.